With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com. All right, we are back with another season review club update, this time talking all things Tottenham with Steve McGookin, who of course you can find on Twitter at Steve McGookin. He's also a writer for the Northern Slant and former chairman of New York Spurs. Steve, an absolute pleasure, as always, to have you back on. We were talking a little bit before we hit recording that the Champions League season and the Premier League season have been very different. And I know you and Patrick recorded another segment for us, and that'll play at the back end of this show. But for this, we're going to mostly stick to the Premier League, because without the glory that's been happening in Europe, the Premier League season was very odd. 13 losses. Struggled mightily down the stretch, won just one of our last five, including a disappointing draw to Everton the last day of the season. Yet, struggling that much still equaled a top four spot. How do you make sense of this 2018-19 campaign that Tottenham had?
It has just been crazy, Kevin, and thanks for having me back on. It's always fun to talk with you. Yes, we've been very schizophrenic this year, the way we played in the Champions League. After the initial sort of chaos of the opening few games, where I think I remember a conversation that you and I had after the first PSV game, where I think I said something like, well, I just want us to miss out on the Europa League altogether.
Yep.
If we're going to go down, let's go down all the way and just concentrate on the league. Well, you know, how wrong could that be? But yeah.
Well, not too wrong. We did still avoid the Europa League.
We did. Thank goodness for that. Yeah, exactly. So, yes, there is this sort of real sense that the euphoria and the enthusiasm for the fairy tale of how we played in the Champions League and the fact that we got to this remarkable final has overshadowed the fact that there is something wrong with our league form, and we can't ignore that. I mean, maybe, and I hear people who say, oh, let's address that after June the 1st. Let's just, you know, get to the final, do the final, enjoy the day, enjoy the experience and love it. And whatever way the cookie crumbles or the cards fall, we'll still have next year. We're back in the Champions League. We have the new stadium. Everything is falling into place for a good step up for next season. And, you know, step up, we're in the Champions League. But we have to address the fundamentals. And as you say, 13 losses in the league is just a remarkable run of inconsistency, or a couple of stretches of inconsistency, particularly worrying towards the end of the season. And I think, as you were saying before we actually came on air, the fact that we were saved by the fact that the other teams competing for those last two top four places didn't seem to want it any more than we did. And I made the point about both Arsenal and Manchester United also had double-digit losses this season. And I can't remember a time when three of the top six teams had double-digit losses. So there's definitely issues to address there, and we can come on and talk about a few of them individually. But yeah, I mean, overall, it was an incredibly schizophrenic type of season, where the highs of the Champions League and particularly the denouement of that campaign, the fact that we had the second legs against Man City and the second leg against Ajax, which were just basically bonkers. Both those games were bonkers. Totally contrasted with how ordinary we were in the league. And I think also, if you think back to the first leg, oh, actually even the first half of the second leg against Ajax, because when we went into the second leg, just a goal down, I think I remember saying to you, I think we can still do this. We can nick something here. But the way we played in that first half, was exactly the way we'd played in the previous two league games against West Ham and Bournemouth. There was no urgency. We looked tired. It looked like we'd come to the end of a very long season. And going in at halftime, two down, you know, the expectation was that we were going to concede again, and then that would have been lights out. It didn't turn out that way, and thank God. But yeah, there is that dichotomy between how awful, consistently awful, we have been in the league especially towards the end of the season, and how wonderful we have been in the Champions League.
Yeah, I was just looking real quick. The last time that three of the top four finished with 10-plus losses was 15-16. That was the year Southampton were top six, and Liverpool were in seventh. And then the last time Tottenham had more than 10 losses was in 14-15, which, if I'm not mistaken, was the split AVB Sherwood year.
That's right, yeah. So it's not ago as I thought, but it seems like a long time ago. And you know, you and I always talk about, well, how do you measure progression? How do you measure the success, yeah, especially with Poch? And we've always said it. I don't believe it's necessary to have silverware to say that that's what you've achieved moving forward. What you need to do is show that you're progressing on a year-on-year basis. And there are certain elements to how we ended up this season that, you know, on the one hand, yes, of course we progressed, but on the other hand, we're still subject to the same vulnerabilities as we have been in the last couple of seasons. So again, we need to address those.
Yeah, and there were certainly a lot of mitigating circumstances to this season that we will address here in a little bit. But if I were to press you for a letter grade for the Premier League portion of this campaign, what would you give it?
It's hard to see it in isolation. I think you would have to say Manchester City and Liverpool, I mean, basically gave us just a fantastic title race. And, you know, congratulations to City, commiserations to Liverpool. It's galling to finish with 97 points and finish second.
Yeah.
So you would have to give both of them an A, you know. I think ourselves and Chelsea, probably a B or a C plus, I think, but everybody else in that, I mean, Arsenal, Man U, and there's no one really below that. So you'd have to say that they didn't want to finish fourth any more than we did, or that's how it seemed. So certainly, you know, Man U probably got a D, I would think. Arsenal, you know, maybe a C. So. But you can't really grade a team in isolation and not sort of compare them to the competitors around them.
True. And as you say, if you wanted the full picture, I mean, Arsenal's grade would probably be far higher because they're in a Europa League final, as are Chelsea, as are we, which really leaves United kind of the ones cut the most adrift in full context. But as I said, kind of trying to stick with the domestic side. Speaking of which, what would you say were the high and low points of the domestic campaign?
Well, I would say... obviously, you have highs and lows on and off the season, or on and off the pitch, I think, this season. I mean, on the pitch, I think, obviously, the high point is getting to the Champions League final. Off the pitch, the completion of the stadium, eventually, and the opening of the stadium and everything that went along around that. I would also point to, and just coming back to your point about Manchester United, which I think, in a way, is an integral part of the story of this Premier League season. A high point for me was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer signing his contract at Man U, because if you think back to the time when he was just the caretaker manager, the pressure for, I mean, among the Man U fans and among the Man U press was still to get Pochettino in at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, quite frankly, we were the luckiest. We were the beneficiaries of the fact that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer came in and had a very successful first few weeks. Because if he had tanked right from the start, could you imagine the vocal pressure or the pressure on Woodward at Man U to go out and get Poch? So I have to say a high point for me this season was when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer signed his contract at Man U, and I did sort of breathe a sigh of relief knowing that Poch was at least safe until the end of the season. The end of the season now, obviously things, the way in which things have developed at Man U, who knows what they might do. But I suspect Solskjaer will be back next season. I think actually we had a round table just after Solskjaer was appointed. And I think we all went round and said, you know, did we think that he was the right man for the job? And I say he was probably the right appointment, but I don't think he's right long term for them. But we'll see. We'll see. But it throws another sort of wild card into that managerial mix. I mean, what they should do is sack Ollie and hire Ollie as caretaker.
Mm.
But on the sort of managerial point. On the managerial point as well, obviously Chris Hughton lost his job today. Mm-hmm. And I think that's quite shameful, to be honest with you. If you have a manager who keeps you up, who, you know, essentially does the job that he's hired to do, is keep you in the Premier League. I suppose in a way they're being honest by saying, well, we're not going to give you any money to strengthen the squad. But it's just a shame to see Chrissy lose his job like that. And I know he'll get picked up very quickly.
Yeah, but it is worth noting that his kind of final act of kindness was letting us win late with that Eriksen strike and then holding Arsenal to a draw. Because honestly, for me, I think as stupid as it is, it's so indicative of this season that probably the greatest joy I had after a domestic match this season was when Brighton drew Arsenal. It wasn't any of our matches. It was the fact that Brighton managed to pull off that draw that meant we were all but insured Champions League again. It wasn't about finishing over Arsenal anymore, as Pochettino has said, and I'm actually pretty surprised that the fan base has reacted as such. Yeah. It isn't a big deal finishing over Arsenal anymore. That's not the goal. I think Pochettino said our sights are way higher than that. And that is clearly evident. But that match, I'm sure part of it was that it was because it was against Arsenal. But the fact that what it meant was that Tottenham were guaranteed Champions League football, barring that ridiculous 8-goal swing. That was an incredible moment, even though it did not involve Tottenham on the pitch.
Yeah, I know exactly it was. And the interesting thing, of course, is all four of those teams were just remarkably inconsistent in the final weeks of the campaign.
Yeah.
And the thing that I really wanted to avoid was having to go into the last day of the season and needing to win against Everton, because, you know, take nothing away from Everton. They have improved tremendously in recent weeks. And I think they have a good platform to build on there with a couple of new signings. But I would not have wanted us to go into that final game needing a win. And,
right.
And that's how it proved. So yeah, absolutely. It's we were poor towards the end of the season, but thankfully everyone else was as bad or worse.
And it should be noted that once again we dominated the winter stretch. It's seriously has to be at least 4 or 5 years in a row now where we've entered that stretch kind of in that sixth range and come out of it third or higher. We just seem to do so well. As soon as those fixtures get congested in that December January period, over the past few years we've had tough matches, easy matches in that stretch, and we just always seem to perform well there and start to catch up with the group. This year what it meant was that we caught up to the title race and had built enough of a cushion by then that this hardcore regression down the back half of the season meant that we were still able to finish fourth. And Arsenal had a run of that themselves. They had that 22 match unbeaten run, but you know, we fortunately did enough of our work early.
I was at the North London Derby at Wembley, and you know, we were lucky to get away with a point
that decided the season.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think also if you think about, you're absolutely right about the winter stretch. But if you think also what we didn't do in that winter stretch was, did we take any points off other teams in the top six?
Ooh, no, yeah, because we lost to City. I don't think we played Liverpool in that stretch, but then we lost to United as well.
Yeah, because we what we did and what we need to sort of think about, and this is where the inconsistency towards the end of the season comes in. If you beat the teams you should beat, you should be in the top six. That should be a given, the way in which the squad is organized.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to a point all four of those teams who were looking for those last two places got to a point with the last sort of five or six games of the season where literally anybody could beat anybody else and did. And you would not have predicted, like you mentioned the Brighton-Arsenal game, you would not be surprised by an outcome that went that way. I mean, look at Cardiff turning over United yesterday, for goodness sake. I mean, it was, you know, we are at that stage now where, for whatever reason and whatever the motivation is on both sides of the teams that are playing, I mean, you would have thought Cardiff had no motivation whatsoever to go out and win that game. And yet, you know, United contrived to undermine themselves. So it was just a crazy sort of final five or six games to the season where nothing was taken for granted and everything was kind of up for grabs. And as I say, the last thing I wanted was to go into the final day of the season having to beat Everton,
who were on a very hot stretch heading into that match.
Yeah,
that would have been quite concerning, but fortunately avoided having to do that thanks to what I deemed my high point of the season.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The official player of the year for Tottenham this year was Son. I was voting for Toby. I know a lot of people were thinking Sissoko. Who do you think was Spurs player of the year this year?
I kind of agree with the award. I would have given it to Sonny as well. I think he has just been remarkable. His ability to sort of step up, especially when Harry's not there, but also alongside Harry as well, is something that we... Again, something that maybe we take for granted that we shouldn't. But no, I think that's a fair representation of his contribution both in the Premier League and the Champions League. And also, you know, we're going to come on to talk about the goal of the season, but I think that's also a fair award, giving his goal against Chelsea. Was the club goal of the season. I agree with that too.
Yeah,
I
mean, hard to dispute that one.
It is, but there are a few other goals sort of spread around. I mean, Moura's the second goal against Ajax. Moura's the touches that he took, for example, just pure kind of individual skill to be able to create that chance for himself out of nothing. Well, you hear very often people say, "Oh, he created a chance out of nothing." That was a chance out of nothing, yeah. And he put it at a crucial moment in the game. But also think about the goal that he scored against Man U, or didn't he score twice against Man U at the
first time? Yeah, and then he also scored the goal against Barcelona that led to the draw that helped us advance out of the group stage. It's very, very ridiculous that when you think about how Tottenham have advanced in the Champions League, save for Kane's goals against PSV, it's basically exclusively Son, Lucas, and Llorente that have been involved in those goals. And then Dele obviously popping up in the Ajax match. A lot of our young core has grown out of the remaining category. But who would you say was our young player of the year? Of course, there is no formal award for that at the club.
Right. I guess Dele would still qualify as a young player, wouldn't he?
Maybe.
The same way as, you know, we had the conversation about Raheem Sterling being the young player, the PFA young player of the year, because he still qualifies in that category. So that was...
Dele is still 23.
Yeah, no, exactly. So I think what I would like to see from Dele is just some more consistency going forward. Obviously, Harry Winks had an injury-shortened season again, but I think there's still... you know, I love Harry Winks, and I think Harry is the player that we should build a midfield around, but I think he just needs a little bit of help. I'm not sure exactly who that should be. But I was very encouraged by Oliver Skipp's performances. He seemed very assured. And Kyle Walker-Peters as well coming through. But, you know, they've been on the fringes of the first team for a couple of seasons, and it's going to be interesting to watch them progress, especially in the context of who we might bring in over the close season. But yeah, we're gifted, actually, I think, with a good development squad and a good scenario where we can attract young players to play with us and enjoy the new training facilities and that sort of thing. So I'm optimistic for young players coming through.
Yeah, and we'll see. I think the summer will be a really telling summer for players that were supposed to matter, like Edwards and Onuma and Carter Vickers. That kind of whole generation of young players seems to have been skipped over.
That's a very good point.
So we'll see if any of them end up sticking around. So we discussed the best goal. It has to be Son versus Chelsea, yeah?
I think so, absolutely.
Yeah, especially if you're just thinking Premier League. All right, so now on to really the big question that I have for you, which is I was discussing with somebody how I think that this, despite being Tottenham's worst season, quote-unquote, under Pochettino, is actually Pochettino's best season management-wise. He's learned how to adapt multiple formations, forced, by the way, because of the players that were available. We've had to deal with an onslaught of injuries to the first team throughout the season. I can't remember a season in my history of being a Tottenham supporter of a season so plagued with injuries, top to bottom, but also especially at the top with Kane's multiple multi-month absences. You had all of the stadium stuff going on where at different points of the season, they were using different training pitches at the new training ground that you mentioned that had different pitch sizes. Because at one point we had to have both Wembley and MK Dons, and then the MK Dons one had to change to the new stadium one. No signings, as everybody knows and talks about. He played a role in that because apparently he refused some players himself and thought these players were good enough, which in the Premier League, they clearly weren't. And in the Champions League, they clearly were. So just curious to get your take on Pochettino's performance this year. Do you think it's insane to say that this may have been his best performance as Tottenham manager?
Well, I think you're absolutely right in that, you know, this is his lowest league finish in the time that he's been with us. But on June the 2nd, we could be starting to build a statue out in front of the new stadium to him. Can you imagine that? The fact that, you know, you have your worst season and at your best season at the same time. It just, again, gets back to this schizophrenic nature of how our season has been. I think to go back to the point that I made earlier about you judge success by learning from your mistakes and moving forward and progressing season by season. I think you're absolutely right to talk about the mitigating circumstances that has held him back this year. Some of them, like the fact that he didn't want to bring in a couple of players, or says he didn't want to bring in a couple of players. That you know, obviously that was his own motivation to do that rather than Daniel Levy refusing to do that. So that's a whole other dynamic that's going to need to be addressed in the summer. But yes, even though we went backwards in the league, I think we've moved forwards in terms of how we think about ourselves as a serious contender for the major honours. I mean, obviously the Champions League, the achievement in the Champions League this year will spill over into the confidence that we have in every tournament that we play in next year. And also don't forget, you know, we won't have the sluggish start that we did this year because we won't have players away at the World Cup, although we'll have some players who'll be taking part in the Nations League, the European tournament in the summer. So there's when you don't hit the ground running, it's kind of hard to pick it up a little later. And you know, as we've talked about, we had that very disappointing sort of run towards the end of the season that let us down. But I do think this could be the defining season for Pochettino. Because win or lose on the 1st of June, he has something now to actually point to and say, this is what I have achieved with this team in spite of everything. And so the question is going to be, how much can he achieve with, you know, a $250 million budget and a full season in the new stadium and a team that's not tired at the start of the season? Next season is crucial, I think. And again, this is going to feed into players in and out, and who they are and what they do and how they fit into the overall structure of the squad. But in terms of Pochettino's performance, I do honestly think that considering everything that we've done this season, this was his best season with us.
Yeah, and I do think a lot of additions probably need to be made, even if it's just removing the players that are currently on the books that aren't really contributing, like Nkudu, unfortunately, like Jansen, although he almost had a chance in that West Ham match to score. So the question I have for you is, which outgoings do you think we'll see in the summer, and then which players do you think will replace them? Well, maybe not specifically players, but what positions of need do you think there will be? For me, I think Toby is probably going to go. Just with that $25 million release clause in his contract, I can't imagine somebody not paying that. I think Eriksen stays because I think that money's being spent elsewhere. L'Équipe today talking about potentially Hazard going to Madrid. That would eat up a lot of their money. And personally, I don't think Eriksen had a good enough year to earn himself a move away. Steve, I'm sure we talked about back in the day. You remember when Vertonghen was like openly flirting with Barcelona and then followed it up with his worst season at Tottenham? And so he had the chance, he just didn't earn it. I think that's kind of where Eriksen's at right now. But I think this summer, as all summers for big clubs, you need to get rid of the players that aren't contributing. So yeah, Nkudu, Jansen, see what's happening with the three I mentioned earlier with Onana and Edwards and Carter Vickers. For me, if we get any offer of significant money, Trippier, I'm just about done with emotionally. But those are my really big ones. Hopefully add one central midfielder, a striker, and a right back would probably be my call. Do you agree with those lists of outs and potential ins?
I do, and I think you've summed it up very, very well there, actually. And I am sorry for Jansen, because you and I were at the Bournemouth game when his first goal for us. So, you know, that will always kind of have a special sort of place for me. But yeah, it's not like he hasn't had enough opportunities and enough chances. So it is a shame. And I know he'll probably go somewhere else and he'll do well and he'll come back to bite us one day. Your point about Trippier, really interesting, actually, because I was saying to Patrick when we were watching the game, you know, last season we would probably have had, widely acknowledged that we had the best attacking fullbacks in the league. We had Trippier and Rose. And now I don't think there's any doubt that Alexander-Arnold and Robertson are that best combination. And that has happened literally by stealth. I don't think our players got any worse. I just think that the two players at Liverpool have excelled in a way that that our players have not. Talking of Danny Rose, actually, who I love dearly, it is worrying when you hear each new statement that he comes out with, that, you know, this could be his last season, or, you know, his last match. And then, of course, you know, obviously responding to the racism situation with England. You know, when he talked about, well, what has he said? I had 5 or 6 years left in the game, and then, you know, I just want to hang it up. So much as I want, you know, our team to be secure and to be steady, and we should have a first 11 that picks itself. But if players aren't happy, if they're not happy in their positions, and clearly, I think you mentioned Toby. There's a situation there that I think needs to be addressed. If players aren't happy in their positions and they want away, then it's not in the club's interest to try and, you know, pigeonhole them into a situation that they don't feel comfortable with. You mentioned the Eriksen thing. I actually agree with you that I think Eriksen will stay. And the reason I think that's the case is not necessarily just Hazard, but the fact that now Coutinho is in the mix, that Barcelona have said they're prepared to listen to offers for Coutinho. So that would tend to remove Ericsson's leverage a little bit, or Ericsson's agent's leverage, I suppose, if he's looking for a top club. So we'll see how that plays out. I would be more than happy for Ericsson to stay, even though, to be honest, at the start of the season, I'd kind of priced in the fact that he might go. So, yeah, we'll see. It certainly looks like Hazard is going to end up at Real Madrid.
Yeah, before I ask you for some quick predictions for next year, we keep hearing this Mauricio Pochettino quote, and I don't want to ignore it, but I also don't want to give it too much legs. But what have you made of Pochettino's comments that if he wins the Champions League, he might consider either leaving or retiring?
Well, you could read it two ways. You could basically say, I don't think he's going to retire. I don't think this is his last job in football. I don't think he would manage another club in England. So that whole speculation that we had earlier about the Manchester United situation, it would be essentially they would try and just win him over with money. And I don't think he's motivated by money. I think he's motivated by his reputation. You could read it both ways, in that this is his way of saying to Daniel Levy, you have come upon a remarkable moment in the club's history, that it's in your hands what path we take from now. You can actually give me the resources to build the team that I want to build. I have taken this current group of players possibly as far as I can under the circumstances. But that, it sounds so ridiculous to say I've taken them as far as I can when you have taken them to the Champions League final, and I'm overjoyed by the fact that that's the case. But in a way, when he makes a statement like that, it's like saying to Levy, you have to be serious now. You've got your stadium. You basically need a team that does the stadium justice. And we need to be a team that challenges both domestically and in Europe for the next decade. And Poch would build that. I honestly do think if Levy backs him financially and says, here's the keys, Maurizio, it's your baby now. You build what happens over the next few years, build a legacy, build a dynasty here at Tottenham, and you could be the greatest manager that we've ever had.
Maybe shy of Bill Nick, unless we're about to have some very fun years.
Maybe, but yes, exactly. I mean, isn't this the most remarkable thing, that we get to look forward to finding out what happens next?
Yeah.
When was the last time that you faced the future, you faced the next season with the sort of optimism that I think we have here? I certainly don't think Poch would retire for permanently, put it this way. I think at some point, he's always said he wanted to manage Newell's old mm-hmm. boy, his Argentinian team. He could possibly manage Espanyol, possibly manage Paris Saint-Germain. But why would he do that? You take a team to the final of the Champions League, and you have a platform on which you're going to build. Why would he look elsewhere? And I don't think he's the sort of manager that is motivated purely by money.
Yeah, nor do I. The Argentinian national team, also one to look out for long term. But yeah, I agree. I agree. I think he's staying now. But it is weird, because I've had friends be like, well, he was clearly joking. But they asked Pochettino in the press conference if he was joking, and he said no. And if your response to that is that he's still joking, I mean, then, there's no way to prove it. But it's just it's a weird thing to come out with right before all of this. So
yeah.
we'll see what happens.
Part of it, I think, and I hope, is basically him just sending
a plea for money over the summer.
Yeah.
Assuming that he does stay, because it would be earth shattering if he didn't. Although, if you had asked me at the start of hiring Pochettino, if I would rather hire him and win a Champions League and then him immediately leave or not, I probably would have taken it. Although now, having gotten used to his managerial style and his connection with the squad and the fan base and everything, man, that's a hard Sophie's choice that I do not want to make.
No, absolutely.
Assuming he does stay, What do you think the expectations are for next season, and any far too early predictions for 1920?
Well, no, I think we should expect to consolidate position in the top four. And we should be looking to, as I say, compete domestically and on the European stage for the next few years. I mean, that doesn't seem unreasonable to me that we would expect that to happen. And we should expect a club of our size to be able to pay for that, to basically say, well, you only accumulate by investing. And this is what, I mean, obviously everything's up in the air in terms of, to a certain extent, in terms of the ownership of the club and what happens if Joe Lewis wants to eventually liquidate his holding or anything like that. But those are things that will come along at a time when hopefully we have a platform or a base established that will survive something like that. We would, if Poch turned around, this is like a nightmare scenario. If Poch turned around on the 2nd of June and quit, that would be, we would not be prepared for that. We would not be able to adapt to anything that sort of flowed from that. I don't think he will. I hope he won't. I hope Daniel Levy hears him. I hope they are able to. I mean, there's nothing to suggest that they don't have a good relationship. I mean, you saw them yesterday doing the lap of honor together at the end of the Everton match. There's absolutely nothing that we're aware of that suggests that they don't both have Spurs' best interests at heart.
I think they have Spurs' best interest at heart in different ways, and perhaps rightfully so due to their jobs. I think Levy's goal has always been more the financial health of the club than perhaps the on-pitch performance. But then he brought in a manager who is obviously far more worried about the on-pitch performance, but whose style, in that he would rather have a smaller squad and that he'd rather have more intimate relationships with them, and that he's very hesitant on bringing in players because he's very careful about the dynamic of the squad. It just happens to lean Levy's way a little bit as well. But yes, I do agree that in their own special ways, they both have the interests of Tottenham at heart. It's going to be a very, very strange season next year. I personally think that Tottenham could be actual title challengers next year, not this like month thing. Because if you think about it, I saw a picture midway through the season, and it was a picture of our, what was it, 2015-16 squad? Was that the Leicester year?
Yes.
And it was, you know, at the back, Walker, Toby, Dyer, Jan, Rose. In the midfield, it was Wanyama, Dembele, then Eriksen, Ali, Son, Kane. And I was thinking, outside of Son and the players that are remaining, who is better now than they were then?
Dembele.
Yeah, right? Dembele had his huge increase, but
that's the one that we haven't been able to replace, and the one we've struggled to replace, and probably the one that is the most important that we replace for next season. But yes, you're absolutely right, and this goes back to the point I was making about Poch thinking, well, have I brought this group? The dynamic within this group, have I brought them as far as they will go? And what we need is a few seeds in there of new players who will sort of shake it up and force the players to challenge them for places. And I think, if we can do that next season, and I think Poch is the sort of manager that can manage that transition in a way. Again, it depends on who leaves. I think your point about Toby is a good one. We haven't replaced Dembele. We've had a string of injuries that have sort of prevented the similar sort of central midfield linkages that we would probably have preferred. I know this sounds like a cop out, but it depends who leaves and who comes in. But I have infinite confidence in Poch's ability to take that blend and make it work.
Yeah. And I realized that I left mine off on a really negative note by saying everyone's worse now. But I guess what I was trying to highlight is they're worse right now. Like, not in general, but Kane has struggled with form and injuries all season. Delhi suffered a dip in form. I think Eriksson played a good 20 to 25 good games for us this season. Then at the back we were still pretty good. I think Vertonghen and Toby both had fantastic years, but like I said, I'm not sure one of them will be back next year. Trippier regressed in a massive way. Rose, his presence getting back and forth is impactful, but his actual like assist tally dipped. Lamella went from helpful player off the bench to just being hurt again. Seems he's missing out. The positive additions were Lucas because we didn't make any signings over the year. So I guess what I'm saying is next year, it is unlikely that Kane misses 2 to 3 months due to injury. It is unlikely that Delhi suffers through a season again the way he did this year. We have to add in central midfield. We can't trust that Winks will be fit ever. That's why it was such a problem that we sold Dembele, is both of them were injury prone, but their injuries tended to not always overlap. So that is an issue with squad building. Son continues to improve. You play Sanchez over Toby, assuming that he leaves. You probably bring in somebody behind him rather than in front of him. But on the whole, without that bad luck, the full year at the stadium, the reverse of everything that caused this season to be poor domestically, almost all of them are going to be fixed next season, even if we didn't sign a central midfielder, which we absolutely have to. And that's why I think we could genuinely be challenging with a title last year, is this was basically the worst case in almost every scenario at the club, and it was still good enough for fourth. Like you said, it took some help from other clubs, but that is starting to become the floor 3 years in a row now. So now the question is, what's the ceiling?
Exactly. And we have to be prepared for next season not to have some of the success that we had this season. That's another thing as well.
I think it'll probably swap. I think we'll finish higher in the Premier League and probably not make a Champions League final.
Yeah, sure. I think that's right. But I think obviously if you bring in three or four, you know, not potentially good players, but established good players that Poch has to work with to add to the squad, that's not going to gel straight away. So we have to be prepared that the marks that we've set this year, we can still attain top four. We can still work on performing well in Europe. But to all intents and purposes, this year I think is a as you say, like a one-off, a complete one-off in terms of what we have overcome, both what we have overcome among our own squad, but also how the other teams around us in the Premier League conspired basically to allow us to finish in the top four.
Yeah, it was certainly a strange one, and we will leave it there. Steve, thanks so much for coming on. We will have your segment with Patrick play after this, but if you'd like to tell the folks where they can find you over the summer, now would be a great time.
Thank you very much, Kevin. It's always a pleasure coming on with you and to talk, you know, Spurs. You can get me at Steve McGookin on Twitter or at northernslant.com, which is the website that I work for here in Belfast. So good luck to everybody on if you're going to Madrid on the 1st of June. And here's to the new season. I think we're on the up.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Steve, for coming back on. It's a pleasure as always, and I'm sure we'll speak soon.
Thanks, Kevin. All the best.
I'm Steve McGookin in London with my good friend Patrick Kerr. We're just at the final mark of the 90 minutes in the Spurs-Everton game, and we're just going to reflect for a couple of minutes on a remarkable season. Patrick, that was, the highs and lows, really, of that season are incredible. Obviously, we'll come on to talk about the Champions League in a wee minute, but the thing that struck me about this year was 13 losses in the league, which is just so much, so far ahead of every one of our top six competitors. And what do you think was the problem there with our form in the league this year?
Yeah, well, I feel slightly deflated. I mean, we just seen us draw 2-2 at home to Everton, and that's kind of just sort of sums up our league form. We just haven't been good enough in the league. And as you say, 13 defeats, it's a pretty shocking statistic, frankly, Steve. I mean, obviously it's overshadowed by the glory we hope to come in the Champions League final. But nonetheless, I mean, if you look at our performance the last 2 months, I mean, it's relegation territory. We've just been sloppy. We've given the ball away too much. We haven't taken our chances when we had them. We looked out of shape. We've looked out of kilter. It's league form has been diabolical, actually, recently.
When you consider what it could have been, how much was there for the taking, really?
Well,
this
we were talked of as, if you recall, back in when we had the reverse fixture, the away fixture at Everton in December, we beat them, whatever it was, 6-1, 6-2. We were talking about being league title contenders, and we were. And it's just since the turn of the year, it's been diabolical in the league. Contrast that, obviously, with the incredible run we've had in the Champions League, and I'm scratching my head because it just doesn't stack up logically.
It really doesn't. And when you think about that first half against Ajax, and you think back to the two previous league games against West Ham and Bournemouth, how poorly we played in those two league games, and we played pretty much exactly the same. It was a continuation of that in the first half against Ajax.
Yes.
And you went in at halftime really expecting us to concede again, which makes the turnaround all the more remarkable. And what do you think it is about Poch and this team and the Champions League and overcoming literally every hurdle that we have faced?
Well, maybe there's an element of destiny about it.
There goes Poch.
Yeah, there he goes. He's off to Real Madrid on the superbike. People talk about destiny in Liverpool in the Champions League this year. You know, who knows? We obviously seem to be able to turn it round, and this competition seems to have so far had our name on it. I just hope we don't have another Premier League performance in Madrid in 3 weeks' time. We need a continuation of the Champions League performances we've had. The City away league game, the second half of the second half on Wednesday night. I mean, that's the sort of performance we need.
Yeah.
If we play it, we prepared the Prem. We're in diffs.
That's a very good way of putting it. We don't need a Premiership performance in the Champions League. Absolutely right. So just wrapping up with a sort of look forward to Madrid in the Champions League final. Congratulations to Man City for retaining the championship today, but commiserations to Liverpool. It really is a remarkable season when you can finish with 97 points and one defeat all season, and come out with nothing.
Against City.
Yeah, so how much of a motivator is that going to be for them in Madrid, or do you think it could act psychologically against them, that the fact that they might be deflated
It could go either way. They might be deflated on the back of being so near and yet so far. You know, football's many things, but it's not fair.
Yeah.
No one said it was, and justice is not meted out in a even-handed way, it could really motivate them. I think the thing is, for me, if the game was, say, next weekend, Steve, there might be more of an impact. Both sides will have had 3 weeks to recover, think about it, train, get ready. I think it will literally be a different ball game, metaphorically and literally speaking. So I think there won't be much impact.
I totally agree with you, and I think also, they're going to have Salah fully fit by then. We're going to have, hopefully, Harry at least fit enough to be on the bench. And as we were saying earlier, it's 90 minutes. 90 minutes, the rest of the season doesn't matter, form doesn't matter. 90 minutes could go either way.
And I think Liverpool are the favourites, clearly, in the basis of they just score goals, mm-hmm. and lots of them, and it's going to be extraordinarily difficult for us. I don't think we should kid ourselves. But as you say, listen, anything happens. If Moura finds, his scoring boots like he did on Wednesday night, if Son has the game of his life, would you a big one from Eriksen and Ali?
Yeah.
Harry could be back.
You say that every week, though.
Say that every week, right. Kane should be back. We've got some amazing players to draw on, and another kind of game-changing moment. Bring on the big man, Llorente. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's so many twists and turns.
Yeah.
But I'm comfortable with them being the favourites, to be honest.
Absolutely, I agree with you, and I'm just glad that we've got to this bonus point with top four assured. I didn't want to go into the final game of the season having to win to secure top four.
Just as well.
And, you know, here's to you know, good luck in Madrid, and here's to another fantastic season at this wonderful stadium that we have here.
Yeah, looking back, I mean, the new stadium, Champions League football next season, and the Champions League final, I think... Your proverbial arm would have been bitten off.
Absolutely.
Had it been extended back in August, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
So lots to be positive about.
Absolutely. Thanks, Patrick. See you next season.
Thanks, Steve.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.